You're listening to the AID Network.
Hey friends, welcome back to another Adventures in Design. I want to talk to you real quick about how you make good things happen. It's a very, very easy concept, yet so many people ignore it, put it off, wait till tomorrow, and it's just this easy. Are you sitting on the edge of your seat? Because this is going to blow your mind. Good things happen to you when you decide to make them happen. Now, I know this sounds like snake oil salesman bullshit, but just think about it. How in the hell are you ever going to get from point A to B if you don't try? And by try, I mean actively pursue what it is that you want. You see, a lot of people go through this world, and I was once one of them, just thinking that one day all your hard work and persistence is going to catch up with you. And that's a half truth. But the other half to that truth is that you have to be constantly auditioning for the role that you want in this world. So you have to show everybody, including yourself, what you're capable of and what you want to do more of. Then people can see that it exists and goes, aha, I have to hire her for this. We need more of this. Today's guest, Lauren Griffin, has had her best year ever. I studied her entire world and she even agreed with me that the woman is on a roll. And today we explain how it all started. When Lauren Griffin, aka Typo Griff on Instagram, go follow her. Her account is, it's sinful how small it is. But just as we've expressed 1,000 times on the show, Lauren started to give herself permission to do the type of work she wanted to do. She put it out into the world, and then we all know what happens. You know what? Fuck it. I'll repeat this again because some of you are having a hard time catching up with this concept. Do the work that you want to do. Put it out into the world. You feel better about yourself. People compliment you. Maybe you get hired to do a little bit more of it. Next time you do it, you have more confidence. The work gets better. You feel better about yourself. People like it. You get a better response. You get hired to do more of it. The next time you do it, you're even more confident. The work starts to shine. People start to really appreciate it and know you as the person that does this kind of work. Clients start to hire you for it and you do more of it. And that just repeats and repeats and repeats. The only way that it stops is if you stop putting more of you out into the world. And the only way it doesn't start, if you decide not to start. Don't believe me? Talk to anybody that ever did anything that was worth a bucket of shit. Why do I keep using the bucket of shit analogy? A bucket of shit is not worth anything. I don't know why that's where my redneck brain goes. But if you need that extra push, or you want to recharge your creative batteries, or if you want to take the end of the year, like I will allow you to make your goal for the end of the year is to work on making a goal for next year. I'll allow that as long as you're actively pursuing keeping a journal about all the things that you want to do next year. Regardless, either way, if you need an extra push or you just want to recharge your batteries, California, I'm talking to you. Meet me and Lauren and our friend Cisco over at Nevermade, and we get to meet Brian Steely for the first time and so many other creatives down in San Diego. That's right, Pop-Up Crop is coming to Southern California. And let me tell you something. I was one of the keynote speakers last year when Lincoln was the host up in Portland. And it's a good hang session just designed as a conference. It's way more about going. And sure, there's talented speakers and live demos like the one that Lauren will be doing about her neon style. But what really happens is you end up hanging. You end up hanging and making friends, connecting with old ones. California folks, you have no reason not to go because San Diego is such a fun drive. I just did it last weekend. Come on out, drive the coast down and meet me and some good buds and your new best friends down in San Diego, where you're in a room full of like-minded professionals, people that are not just showing up to work and being present, but people that are actively pushing themselves to be the best versions of themselves. Once you start meeting friends that have a similar mindset of you and people that can sort of be a check and balances on what your dreams and goals are, it's one of the important pieces of making your career build and move forward. And that's why these crops just keep on popping up. Guess what? You can use the code AID19 and get $30 off. You're welcome. There you go. I just put gas in your tank. I mean, you know, $30 in Southern California is going to get you like, you know what, 4 gallons. But regardless, you have no reason not to go with coupon code AID19, $30 off. If you're from out of town, starting to get cold where you live, you want that last little hit of summer, come on out to San Diego, bro. Add another day, go up to Disneyland. Who doesn't want to come to California And I just made it cheaper at AID19. That's $30 off when you go over to popupcrop.com. It's happening November 9th. I hope to meet you out there and for you to meet Lauren and Cisco and Dre of Nevermade, as well as the talented and charming Brian Steely. So hurry up. Pop-Up Crop opened up a few last-minute tickets, so don't email me next week complaining, oh, I missed out. Are those tickets not available anymore? The coupon code's not working, Bricky. Instead, email me next week. Ask where we're going to meet for lunch in San Diego. You know what? Don't email me. Just meet me in San Diego. Go to popupcrop.com, and it will be happening here November 9th down in sunny San Diego. Today's episode shows how good things happen, and like Lauren said, there's sunshine for everyone. But I would like to add to that, there's sunshine for everyone that stands under the sun. You have to get up. You got to get active to head out there and catch those rays. Life only blesses those that first learn how to bless themselves. It's Lauren Griffin on Adventures in Design 1034.
Coming to you live from the Saul Rosenberg Studios, broadcasting worldwide into all ships at sea, here comes another action-packed episode of Adventures in Design.
I'm great. How are you doing?
Where in Texas are you from? I mean, and that's the great thing about living in LA, right? Like, we all live in LA. We love being here. It's a fun place to be.
But none of us are from here.
It's so rare. I would say that it's 1 in 10 people that I interview from here are from here. So where in Texas was your little wagon from?
I'm from the Dallas area, but I went to college at UT in Austin. Mm. So it's sort of like a mix of Dallas and Austin for me.
Which is weird because I would say that Dallas and Austin are not really like Texas.
Yeah.
Right? Those are islands.
It's the blue oasis in the red state.
Yeah. Because I can be cool and be like, yeah, well, you know, back in Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'm from Louisville, bro. It's not really Kentucky. But we both have this common bond of, you know, you can live in this bubble. And then you buy a couch from somebody, or you want to go pick apples because that's the time of year. And then you go outside of your bubble and you're like, holy shit.
You're like, oh, this place is scary.
I live in Texas. Yeah. I really am in Kentucky right now.
Yeah, I have some, you know, war stories from leaving my blue bubble, but let's not get into those.
But I do think, though, that there is an extreme value of being from someplace that, you know, is always sort of a stone's throw from a different ideology. It kind of gives you a different appreciation for America and the design experience, right? Because what we do is problem solving. It's communication. And if you only know how to talk to a certain part of the population, how good is your communication skills?
No, I totally agree.
And you work with Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I do.
And that goes outside of the bubbles that we're talking about sometimes. Right? Yeah. It's a bubbleless product.
Yeah.
Meant for all. But how did you end up in Los Angeles?
Honestly,
yeah.
It was just off the cuff decision. I was living in Albuquerque for about 2 years.
That sounds methy.
It was actually, it was lovely in its way. Yeah. I moved there. They hate Texans. They hate, I would flash my Texas ID and they'd be like, get out of here. But around the middle of year two, I was really starting to fall in love with it. But I knew it was temporary. It was always temporary when I decided to move to Albuquerque. And I was just sort of at this place where I was either going to keep moving on or I was going to move back to Texas. And Texas felt like it would be a backward step at that point.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And I mean, I absolutely hold Texas so dear in my heart.
Oh, for sure.
But I wanted to go back to California, I guess.
I love, I do love California. I love Kentucky and I love being from there. And I would never trade that experience that I have of knowing what the real America is like.
Totally.
That being said, I would hope to not find myself living there again just because I've changed so much. And it's changed to me. And probably like you and I probably have this bond is that the idea of Texas is probably much sweeter and grander than actually being in Texas.
Totally. If you like look around my living room, I have the like you know, you may all go to hell.
Yeah.
I'll go to Texas, print, yeah. You know.
You celebrate it. Yeah. It's who you are.
And I, like, you know, I take pride in my y'alls and all that stuff. Everyone's just like, oh, where are you from?
Yeah, I still get this one all the time because I will be out and about and I'll just say, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
To someone who's like, you know, 32.
And it's just like, what?
And like, don't call me ma'am. I'm like, look, I'm not trying to be weird or anything. I'm just from the South and that's how we was raised, you know? Yeah. And when I do say Louisville, people are like,
wow, they're like, what? Did you just swallow?
Is he having a stroke? He's stroking out. Get him out of our house. So when you moved to Albuquerque, mm-hmm. are you doing freelance design at that moment? Or did you find a job out there? Like, how did your work go on these travels with you?
I moved out there in a relationship.
Okay.
And I was going to do freelance for a while. It was right after I graduated college. That was a dark period.
The lost years. We talk about those a lot.
It was only a few months, but okay.
The last months.
Wow. I was in my pajamas trying to design everything that I possibly could for any job ever.
Mm.
And I threw up a few designs on a Behance profile.
Yeah.
And I had been looking for jobs the whole time. But this creative director at Three Advertising, which in, not to like knock other ad agencies in the area, but I think that they make top-notch work and it was like the only place I would want to work.
Mm-hmm.
Tim McGrath, he reached out to me and he was like, love your work. You want to like come, you know, see if you would be a good fit for this job.
Wow.
And I was like, I remember I was in my pajamas. It was probably 2 p.m. Like it was just freelance darkness. And I like ran around my house. I was so stoked. So I worked there for about a year and a half.
So you started out as a freelancer.
Sort of. I was just like trying to get a foothold in some way.
Just trying to break in the industry any way you could.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get offered a position from your work that you've been putting out online.
Mm-hmm.
And you were ready to jump in and take that job.
Yeah. And it was only a part-time position, which also was part of the reason why I wanted to move on after a year and a half. Because, you know.
Who's going to stay for part-time
work? Who's
going
to stay in Albuquerque for a part-time job?
Yeah.
That'll end up going methy.
No doubt about it. That will end up going
I mean,
methy.
I absolutely loved the ad agency. I loved all the people. The experience that I got from them was, like, incredible. It really fine-tuned some of my knowledge of the programs. Like, all of the print materials in InDesign, I work so much faster now than I would have if I didn't have that experience. And
so it was kind of like college 2.0.
Yeah, kind of.
They're paying you a little bit of money, but they're showing you how a lot of stuff works.
Internship almost feeling. And I actually still do work for them.
Oh, that's awesome.
I do these cruiser illustrations. Mm-hmm. Tim, he's like a cruiser enthusiast.
Oh, we're going to talk about those today. Don't worry. That's on the agenda.
That's where they come in. Yeah.
I was curious how the trucks fall into everything you do. But so when you're working there,
mm-hmm.
what was the biggest difference between pajama Lauren and office Lauren, other than slacks?
Structure.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes. Oh, man. And I'm currently freelance, but I found that I have to discipline myself in a way that I like probably wouldn't have thought of if I hadn't had structure from a job like that. And that was probably the most valuable thing that I got from that job.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, you go freelance or you work for yourself and then you will spend the whole rest of your career trying to nail down what exactly is that perfect routine.
Totally.
Like you and I were just talking as I was setting up today in your living room in your lovely place here in LA that I just now figured out, you know, 5 years of doing this is my full-time job. I just now figured out, do all the interviews on one day, dummy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But that's the process, right?
Little things like that. It just will completely turn it all around.
But I think the difference is, and you know this from being professional Lauren to freelance Lauren, but now not in pajamas, dressed nice today, is that you're building a routine based around your personality.
Yeah.
And that's a way different thing than having to fit into somebody else's personality when it's basically, when am I my strongest? When, what parts of my day do I want to write emails back or illustrate?
Yeah, totally. And also, you know, being able to say no to designing coupons. Like
somebody's got to do it. It's not going to be us, but
someone's got to do it. And like, I did my time.
You're talking to somebody who's done like over 1,000 web banners in my career.
Hard same.
But they were, I think at the time, $40-$50 a piece, and I could do, you know, 30 in a day, and it was awesome. And it was music related, so I could say I was in the music industry, although I was saying Brandi Carlile, click by now. But anyways, it still worked out. So
you did work for Brandi?
I worked for the Coalition of Independent Music Stores. Mm-hmm. I was part of their online team, and there were a couple of acts that we got involved with really, really early. And so I've been in the background of that career from like day one.
That's cool.
I remember they're saying that, you know, this young girl, and she's not so young anymore, is going to go on and do some things. And the other two artists that I saw the Coalition really adopt was Kings of Leon and John mm-hmm. Mayer. So all three of those, I was involved on the ground floor up, seeing those careers come together. I do need to know this, though. A girl from Texas, mm-hmm. who's now a young lady living in Los Angeles, who's got the better tacos?
Oh, Texas. Actually, for breakfast this morning, mm-hmm. I went to Home State down the street, which mm-hmm. is Texas-style breakfast tacos. Because, like, literally, it's this guy who opened a store that, you know, they just won the best flour tortillas in all
the
of tortilla LA.
The tortilla is the crucial part of the taco.
It's the most important
thing. It really is. And when people just do store-bought or like, and they think that it's about the accoutrements, it's, mm-hmm. you got to start with the base up. So Texas, but when you're in California, you still go Texas.
Exactly. And I actually get my hot sauce shipped from Torchy's.
I saw that.
Monthly, because I have like four of them in the house right now.
I was just in Austin. And it was one of those trips where I worked so much that I never got to go to Salt Lick. I didn't get to go to Torchy's. I didn't get to go to Juan in a Millions.
I haven't been there.
Juan in a Millions is fantastic. Come for the handshake, stay for the tacos.
All right.
I have a question, though. So you do a lot of neon-looking work.
Mm-hmm.
But you would live in a neighborhood that has a ton of old retro vintage signage everywhere. And a lot of it is Spanish. And I want to know, were these signs ever new, or did they always look bleached out by the sun? Is that the sort of Mexican vibe of like, no, we don't want bright red, we want rusted orange.
We want it to look like it's been in the sun for a century.
Yeah, like there's not a sign out there that looks like it was made in the last decade.
It's funny, I actually was driving by to pick up my tacos today. I was driving by one of my favorite signs. And
so
I
LA
was
to drive
thinking
to go get
that
your tacos.
It said something like coldest beer in town. And every time I pass by it, I think it's just the coolest freaking sign I've ever seen. And it's just on this corner. And I remember thinking to myself, like, not that this was like some super in-depth revelation or anything.
Oh, please lay it on us.
I was just like, people probably think that looks like garbage, but it is the prettiest thing on the block to me.
I was having that same thought today. I was like, could you go out of your way and purposefully make this color palette and texture? Because there is just sort of a warmth and worn outness, but friendliness to it.
Yeah.
And it's so,
which is what a lot of people are trying to get from design right now. Mm. Like that sort of pastiche, like tapping into the vintage. I know that a lot of my inspiration comes from vintage design, but getting that actual like physical texture and all of that. Yeah. I don't know how to do it.
Well, that was my thing with design is I would go to extreme lengths to make something that was digital feel like it was analog and it had been printed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with you and your neon look, it kind of reinforces this theory I've had for quite some time is that the more digital that the world becomes, the more we all appreciate the analog.
100%.
And you're not just a trendy designer following this trend, is that you've also actually made neon signs. Your artwork has been put into neon.
Yes, which is actually, I was reached out to by a neon artist. She's incredible. I think she's 26.
Wow.
Lives in Echo Park and is, her name is Danny B. And she reached
out
to me.
Shout out to Danny B. Neon Sign.
Shout out to Danny. but she makes these incredible signs and she reached out to me and she was like, do you want to collaborate on something? And I was like, are you kidding me? I've always wanted neon, right. Like real neon.
Right. When you do it in the digital space, it's a monoline illustration.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually extremely simple. But the
you're not supposed to say
no,
that.
No, no, no.
The competition's listening.
The complicated aspect comes from the simplicity because you have you have this monoline and you have to work with that and bring detail and bring like you almost have to imply shape with it, which is so much fun.
And that is the exact reason why so many of us take the road of commercial art versus fine art, because it's designed within restriction. There's the clients, there's the budget, there's the quick time around, turnaround. Hey friends, today's episode is made possible by our friends over at SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes, a fantastic service designed to save you both time and money, which really is the core of making a profitable and successful business. Just imagine never being held down by shipping again. No more in the middle of creative workflow having to look at the clock and say, I've got to get to the post office because it's closing in the next 20 minutes, only to get there and find a long line with somebody at the front of it that is an adult that seems to have never shipped anything before and is completely unaware of the rules that seem to always be changing. SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes is simple. Just click send and save for as low as $4.99 per month, where you can send envelopes, flats, and packages right from your desk, and you are back to business in no time. When you log in and look at all comparable shipping rates, you know with confidence that you're paying the most efficient amount of money for your shipping, and you also know that it's not going to take you any time to print the label from your desk and sit it on your front porch. And as promised, with using SendPro Online from Pitney Bowes for just $4.99 a month, you just save both time and money. Go to pb.com/design to access the special offer for a free 30-day trial plus a free 10-pound scale to help you get started. That's pb.com/design. Experience shipping made simple with the free trial of SendPro Online from our friends at Pitney Bowes. And the monoline look or the neon look is taking, well, I've got this digital equipment in front of me that can do anything I want to. But what if I take it down to a simplification of the monoline? Mm-hmm. And then what if I think about what would actually be possible with neon? Because there's a certain mechanism on how things can and cannot overlap.
Right, right. Like how you can't have a like really acute angle.
Right.
You can't have connections. You can't do like extremely, complicated type. You know, you have just these restrictions from the medium itself. And sometimes when Danny has like talked to me about some of the things that are possible when it comes to actual neon stuff. I mean, we haven't talked in like super depth about like cost, but it's, you have these restrictions and you kind of have to implement that even if it's going to live in a digital space.
If you take anything that you're doing digitally, mm-hmm. and you have to meet with a printer or a neon craftsman, or I myself, I was a printmaker, did silk screens and gig posters and stuff like that.
That's dope.
Once you get into learning how the real world restrictions work, because the computer's like magic land.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all fantasy and none of it's real.
You can do anything.
Exactly. But when you meet with Danny B, shout out Neon Signs in Echo Park, then you start to understand that real world restriction, which I say improves the fake art.
I agree. Yeah.
Because like with silkscreen, we had to learn how to do everything in spot colors. Mm-hmm. They don't mix. They come out one at a time.
Yeah. This isn't just one thing that just rolls out your whole design.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can't make one of those tubes just magically turn into other colors.
No.
That's called more tubes. And there's no gradients in neon. So that real world restriction it'll inform you better as a designer, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So at this point in your career, what is your workflow? Like, does everything that you do is for clients? I mean, you're a full-time freelancer, but do you still get time to work on Lauren projects?
So I've been trying to get this, some ideas that I've had out the door. Mm-hmm.
For yourself?
For myself.
Okay.
I wanted to create a sort of online shop of patches, pins, and prints. Like,
yeah.
Just because I have these like small ideas of things that I want to exist in the world. And, you know, I've gotten some good feedback on the ones that I sell on my website. Like I have a few enamel pins.
Yeah.
But I want to actually like put more heart and soul into that and create it as an entity separate from my design moniker, Typograph. That's sort of in the works. But I do think that my whole 100% client work lifestyle right now is not helping that, because I have a lot of work.
You're staying busy.
Yeah, very, very.
When you look at your work, the last year has it's improved significantly. Not that you weren't good a year ago.
No, no, I'm. Thank you.
You can see that month by month, like you're hitting a groove, and it probably is the intense pace of next, 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 because you're. Yeah. It seems as
juggling.
If you're juggling, but also it looks to me that you're a young designer who's learning to trust instinct because it's coming in so fast.
Yeah, I feel that way. I feel like a lot of things that I was getting done in years prior were out of necessity, and now I'm playing catch up with myself. A lot of the time, because I'll have four things come in and I'm like, all right, you have to solve this problem this week.
Right.
All four of them. So do it.
But trial by fire, right?
Like, yeah.
And
yeah.
You have the real world experience of knowing how it works at an agency.
Mm-hmm.
You have the discipline on your own. You're finding your groove and your footing and your look and your style. So now it's just life math. Like, four opportunities come in. I want all four of them. How do I make it work? The work that you do for Pabst Blue Ribbon,
mm-hmm.
first off, got to be kind of a dream client, right? It's pretty hip.
Yeah, it was the way that I got that job was kind of surprising. And okay. I didn't really get that job. I've just sort of wormed my way into this space.
Mm.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that's everybody's life story.
Yeah.
As somebody who's done this now over 1,000 times, everybody somehow found a side door that was open, slid in, looked like they belonged. Everybody's like, grab a table. You come over here and help us out.
Totally. So I was actually hired on as another graphic designer's assistant.
Mm.
And he was great. But we were put on a team that was a really, really small group of people for one of the smallest Pabst brands. And I was doing...
Which is?
Small Town. Okay. It's literally called Small Town.
they nailed it right out of the gate.
Yeah. And like they had some like niche products, like Not Your Father's Root Beer, which is very like, it's popular in like the Midwest, mm-hmm. and like all of that. And I, you know, it wasn't my favorite type of work because I was doing point of sale for it was like heavily textured, like wood textures and like all of this stuff. It wasn't my aesthetic.
Yeah.
But
it was beer aesthetic.
It was root beer aesthetic.
Okay.
But yeah, so I sort of pride myself on being a yes man, mm-hmm. when it comes to work. Like if someone asks me to do it, I'm going to do it well, I'm going to do it quickly, and I'm going to get it back to them as fast as I can. And I got to be that kind of person for Small Town. And then they started putting me on other projects. Mm. So I started getting Qingdao and Olympia and like these little guys, and people started finding out about me. A lot of people didn't know I was a graphic designer. I was mm-hmm. just a person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So people just sort of started coming to me, and eventually it kind of got up to the executive level. And they asked me to do some stuff on the like internal rebrand, and that was my side door. Slipped right in.
But that's such a common, it feels unique to you, but it's such a common theme of just get yourself
just
in the room.
Just do it. Yeah.
Get yourself in the room, be really good while you're there, and it's discovery from within, right? Like, I think a lot of people exist in like one life dreaming that this whole other life is somehow just going to discover them and find them.
Mm-mm.
And you started with, you know, the small brands, textures and design look that you're not really a big fan of.
Yeah.
But you did it.
Well, they rebranded too. So like nobody has to deal with that shit anymore.
There you go. Thank you, world.
Yeah.
But you were there and you took the opportunity. And that shines to other people, right? Like the reason why I made it up to the executives, like we think we have some talent, or we mm-hmm. have somebody that can do this, or they become a fan of your work. But your look for PBR, the work that I've seen you do,
mm-hmm.
is so different. I mean, it's on brand in that it's kind of anti-art, anti-establishment.
Right.
But it's incredibly trendy and not on brand for like drunk uncles that I know.
Right. Well, technically, a lot of the work that I've been doing is for Pabst Brewing Company.
Mm.
So it's the umbrella
that makes all
that makes all the
drink,
you know, Rainier and Olympia and blah, blah, blah,
got
blah,
it,
all
got
of
it.
The beers.
The parent company.
Yeah. So this was, they had an internal rebrand, and they wanted to have some you know, some exciting pieces for in the office, mm-hmm. To get people, you know, feeling like they're in a cool company.
Right.
And some of the stuff they asked me to do, they're like, we're going to meet with you. It's just me in a room of two other people. And they're like, what do you got? You know,
where are those meetings taking place? Out here?
No, actually, there's an office near Beverly Hills, Santa Monica area on the west
but
side.
But it's in the LA area.
Yeah. I don't go into the office a lot because it's about 2 hours on a bad day.
Right.
I'll go into the office. I'll try to time it with the day that they have free lunch because, you know, freelance life.
Yeah, I know all about that.
Yeah.
I love trying to get interviews at the studios on Fridays because that's when they have free lunch for everybody.
Exactly.
I'd be like, you don't mind if I hit this free lunch, dude.
Then they switch it to Thursdays.
Yes, because nobody works on Fridays anymore.
No one works on Fridays. Everyone leaves at 2. Yeah. Everyone thinks it's chill. It's LA.
Nobody gives a shit.
No one's going to stay until 5.
I think that we have the .com industry to thank for the type of work that you're doing, and that I don't really remember. And I mean, maybe it was because I wasn't that far along in my professional career, but it seems like making artwork to inspire your employees mm-hmm. is something that came from the San Francisco area.
Totally. Totally.
And I know a lot of people that exist in that space. Like, well, the stuff I do for Adidas is for the employees of Adidas. Like, it's right. not on the shelf, but it's to make the people that make the shoes happy.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you go to the Google compound or right. I was up in San Francisco for Adobe Live mm-hmm. and they're very much that type of community too. They're like, this is our music room. I'm right. like, y'all jam? Like,
yeah.
when?
Yeah.
You know,
I knew a dude who was I still know him, David Smith, the blacksmith, fantastic designer, illustrator who now lives in LA. He got a job working for Dropbox. I'm like,
what?
You know, their aesthetic is just that fucking box, right? Like yeah. over and over again. Like, what are they going to do with you? He's like, no, we're this internal thing for the employees and for morale. And I was like, so you're like a rich guy's boy toy. You're just like a little art boy toy that
you're just like just make whatever you think will make you happy.
You're just a little muse that is inside of the company. And that was kind of fascinating to me, but I see this strategy being applied more and more. So my favorite piece that you did for PBR or the Pabst company mm-hmm. is I love the one where it's kind of a CMYK inspired color palette.
Ah.
All of the line weight is disruptive. It's not consistent. It's got that grit to it.
Is it the one where they're jumping?
They're dancing.
Oh,
it looks like the old let's all go to the movies but it's let's all get drunk.
That one got killed, so.
Well, that's why, because it's good.
Yeah.
But no, I love the color palette and I love the overprinting. And as a printmaker, I loved all the real world implications that you're putting in digital art.
Well, I was planning on getting that risograph printed.
Oh, okay.
Because I had never done that before and always loved that overprint aesthetic. Because,
so much fun.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And then, you know, when it got killed, I was like, well, maybe I'll get it printed myself then.
Sold.
Yeah.
From a straight edge guy who's 44, I love it. I'd be like, that reminds me of my vision of childhood. Like, not how PBR really existed
Which
then.
Which is funny because it's for an alcohol, you know,
right.
peddler.
But I do like the vibes. Quick question for you. When doing work for Bitcoin, did you get paid in Bitcoin?
No. This was actually for a company that was teaching people how to use Bitcoin via the purchase of pizza with a Bitcoin wallet. So,
man,
the pitch,
pizza will do it. It will lead humans into any trap.
Totally.
So you were doing artwork to help inform people on the Bitcoin experience.
Yeah. So they reached out to me and they were like, we like your neon style. We think you could do something for us in that realm. What do you think of like a pizza rat, like kind of walking people through? I'm like, sounds dope. Let's do it.
Like, is this a fucking joke?
Like, yeah.
Of course I want to do this.
I was like, how do I have a job where I'm literally illustrating pizza rat looking like 80s and sick, like surfing on a...
Like, that was the creative brief.
Surfing on a Bitcoin. No, I proposed that.
Okay, because I'm thinking, who...
thought of this? Yeah. And, like, how did it turn out to look okay? Yeah.
Well, I was curious, once it said Bitcoin in the email, how did it not go into your, like, your spam folder? How did it actually get to you?
I don't know. I think it was... Maybe they reached out to me on Dribbble.
There you go. They got around it. You know, yeah. 50 Cent made a ton of money off of Bitcoin.
A lot of people did. I was like...
His story's wild, though, because he made a lot of money as, you know, a musician, then lost a lot of money on energy drinks.
I didn't know that.
And then when he was, like, down and out, and literally 50 Cent almost only had
a bunch of Bitcoin.
50 Cent to his name, he had did an album in his past where he did the album in exchange for Bitcoin, forgot that he had it. Bitcoin popped. 50 Cent's back to being a millionaire all over
again. That's incredible. Yeah. I also want to know how much Bitcoin you could get for 50 Cent.
What's the equation on that,
What's
right?
What's the equation on that? I guess it's millions.
So you're going to be a part of Pop-Up Crop in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be one of the folks that's speaking there.
Technically, I'm going to be live designing.
Live designing?
Yeah.
That's more comfortable than speaking to you?
100%.
I would live speak in a second.
Oh, no,
live design?
No, live design. I feel like a lot of the time... I'm an extrovert most of the time,
sure.
But when it comes to public speaking, I would say my legs turn to jelly and my stomach is just a volcano.
It's when a lot of extroverts run the other way.
100%. Yeah. I know it's something I should work on and I need to get over, but when they proposed that I could do live design instead, I was like, sign me up.
Done.
Like,
so what are you going to do for everybody?
I actually am going to do a neon style thing because it
is probably
the fastest method that I work in since, I mean, it's all pen tool stuff and that's where I live.
In Illustrator.
So, yeah, in Illustrator. So my plan is actually to do three different designs that are San Diego inspired and then ask the audience which one I should do live.
How could anyone ever be inspired by San Diego? That's gonna be such a hard gimmick.
I'll do some research, you know, flora, fauna, beach.
I mean, maybe they got something down there. I don't know.
I might do something with like CropCon, like see what happens, you know, and then the audience will get to decide which one they actually want to see as a sign.
I don't know how anybody in San Diego has a job because just being in San Diego, you're like, I'll get to it tomorrow.
You're like, can we just grab a beer?
Yeah. I mean, let's just go to one of our many docks and hang out for the day. Do you enjoy, because you said earlier that you went to Adobe Live. Do you enjoy the conference setting and being around your own kind?
Well, actually, Adobe Live was where they had me come on and do live design in 2-hour increments. Mm-hmm. So it was actually kind of a small, intimate thing.
Mm-hmm.
The conferences, I haven't really been a big part of that community yet. I've always wanted to go to Creative South.
Mm-hmm. Shout out Mike
Jones. You know, yeah, shout out for sure.
Break necks. No, hug necks. They don't break necks. They hug necks.
They hug necks.
Break necks is a whole other thing.
Whole different thing.
That's what they do in this neighborhood.
And then I don't know, I sold some like patches and pins at a Dribbble conference, but I never got inside the doors, that kind of thing.
You can't come past this gate.
It's just like which one do you choose? How do you know when to do it? But I mean, I'm very stoked to do the CropCon thing and meet a bunch of designers that I'm super inspired by. So
I think the big part though is the being around, for once in your life, being around a room full of people that understand the oddities of your life. Like, I know that, you know, your girlfriend or your friends probably have a good idea of what you do, but then there's still that thing, well, you could take tomorrow off. You're like, you have no idea.
That drives me crazy. Oh my God. I'm just like, yeah, I got to get to work. And they're like, why?
After tacos.
I'm like, what do you mean? This is my job, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because so much of what we do is magic to others.
Because
people see your Instagram and they know what you're capable of and they think, well, just draw the rat on the pizza. They have no idea. Rat gets drawn 50 times.
Right.
The concept of where, you know, the camera angle, the comp of how everything comes together.
You don't just...
It's not one and done for most of us.
No.
If you can do one and done, you're probably at an amusement park right now today going, so you want your big head on a mini bike or a go-kart? Those are my two options for you.
Although I will. will say those people are incredibly impressive.
Fuck yeah, they are. Yeah. That's why they're doing that job. Because the rest of us can't.
I'm just like, how did you do that? I couldn't do that.
I would
really
ruin
couldn't.
Somebody's entire day at Disneyland because I'd be like, all right, fifth time.
You're like,
I'll
you moved again.
So when you get out and you do something like Pop-Up Crop in San Diego, it's interesting to me because you said, I'm going to put up three designs and ask people what they want to do. And a lot on your Instagram, you use, and I have it wrote down here in quotes, which of these do y'all like best?
Oh, that's okay. Honestly, that's kind of my way around the fabled Instagram. What's the thing where only 10% of your people can
read the comments?
No, only like 10% of people can see things unless you get enough comments.
Oh.
So if I engage people and they vote, then it ups. That's because, you know.
So do you already know which one you're going to go with before you post it?
No, I actually do like to get people's feedback. But a lot of the time I just ask a question so people will engage. It's, you know, I hope that doesn't sound like, you know, dirty or anything.
No, it doesn't sound dirty because any social media seminar or thing advice that you'll see is like, you know, engage with your audience. Like you're supposed to end every post asking a question. Get out of here with your stiff, expensive pillowcase shaped t-shirt. Cause Jack Prince has got custom t-shirts that are affordable, soft, and fitted using next level blanks. Don't let cheap t-shirt prices fool you into buying just that. Cheap and ugly t-shirts. Next Level 3600s are the t-shirt of choice used by many bands and brands that I know that you love. And did I mention Jack Prince's quick? Printed in just 2 days after proof. Get a dozen as low as $7.23 per shirt with free shipping. And if you need less shirts, only pay $8.83 for 4 dozen or $11.75 for 2 dozen. And as I said, all orders ship with free standard shipping. JackPrince.com/circle of trust. Quality shirts printed fast and affordable, which means profitable and convenient for you. JackPrince.com/circle of trust. But I'm like a self-proclaimed know-it-all, so I feel like asking people stuff would show
sometimes
that I don't know it all.
For me to like to type out the which one of these things do you like the best? Because I'm like, is this desperate?
See, that's the thing I always wonder is like, if I say, hey, well, first off, in my line of work, I couldn't be like this person or that person on the show because it'd be extremely insulting to the person that doesn't get picked.
Right, right.
But I always wonder, does it make me look weak or does it? But on the flip side, does it make me look like I care about my audience?
People want to vote for who they want to hear for. You know, like that's you. I feel like people wouldn't think twice about that.
Do you think, though, that it's fascinating that you say, which one of these sons do you like the best?
Oh.
And then somebody somewhere will somehow come up with an idea where it's like, well, I would take the raise from son A and then I'd put it over with son C. You know, like like some people just can't say two.
Right,
B,
right.
C.
I don't mind those people unless they are saying something that makes no sense to me.
So if it's actually constructive,
and
makes somewhat sense,
I really don't want this to sound bad, but if it's a bad idea, I'll be like,
Well, I mean,
also what constitutes a bad idea? It's just an idea.
Yeah. But I mean, as a creator, see, one of the reasons why I typically don't ask the audience is because I make it all off of my instincts. And if you tell me something that's different than me, then there's too many voices inside my head. But I understand, like, I will only want people to give me the feedback that reinforces
that you want.
And that's just an honest answer.
Sometimes, the client will be with the son example, actually, that was for an event company. They weren't sure which one to go with between two of the son icons.
Yeah.
And I tallied up people's responses on Instagram.
You let the people vote.
I let the people vote. I mean, obviously,
wow,
look at you,
Ryan Seacrest.
I have the executive powers here. Like, I can check that. Yeah. But no, it, actually the one that like got chosen was the one that they liked the most, that I liked the most, that the client, I recommended that one and they went with it. So,
cause I noticed that you did that quite often. And then I looked at some of the comments and it seemed like with the following that you have, that they're passionate, they're on this voyage with you. And I was surprised not to see a lot of the Frankenstein advice where it's like, dude, I just asked you, do you like it red or blue?
Yeah.
And then you're like, my mom loved purple. All she ever wanted to see was a purple sunset. Please go with blue. And you're like, you're a fucking crazy person.
You're like, why are you oversharing?
Yeah. So you could say that you're a graphic designer, but I would say that's an insult to you.
Okay.
Because you're a typographer and an illustrator.
Like, I wouldn't go so far as to say I'm a typographer.
Oh, really?
I love making type. And I love letter forms, but I don't know technically if I, because I don't know if I have like the background to truly say I'm a typographer.
You illustrate letters?
Yeah, kind of.
Is that your style?
It is, like, I'm working with type. I am doing typography, but I like, there's so much I have yet to learn. I don't think I've earned that Girl Scout badge yet.
But I would say that you're on a path.
Oh, definitely.
That is more than, like, because to me, graphic design is just bare bones problem solving.
Yeah.
But if you go down the wormhole where people like rat on pizza for Bitcoin, mm-hmm. can you make this happen? That's an illustrator.
Right.
But there's always type inside of your illustrations.
Yeah.
That's a typographer.
And I do, you know, honestly, that's totally fair. I do craft almost all the type in almost all of
them. Yeah, you're not a font gal.
No, I'm not a font gal.
Which I really enjoy.
Fonts are expensive. First of all.
Defont.com.
Hell no. Well, I mean, actually, they have some great fonts, but
you got to dig through some shit.
Yeah, you got to.
But there's some gems on there.
Yeah. I mean, I'll occasionally buy some, like, good display fonts, mm-hmm. or I'll have my like go-to copy fonts, that kind of thing. But the stuff that I really like and the stuff that I really like to make is a mixture of illustration and letter forms. And yeah, I guess I'm a typographer.
Well, there you go. Just beat it out of her.
Yeah. I'm just like,
you will say your,
I'm self-deprecating.
You will say this. I'll break you down. So to me, the illustration of type is different than just bare bones illustration. Mm-hmm. And I would love to know, is your mindset different when you're doing type versus standard illustration? Do you have a different process? Do you attack it differently? Because it's interesting that you do both, sometimes together, but sometimes independent.
I think my process is similar with them.
Okay.
My process is a little unconventional with both.
They all are.
Yeah. I don't use Procreate. I bought an iPad. I thought I was going to do it. Didn't jam, mm-hmm. you know. Maybe that'll change because I am very much about like hand drawing. But what I do is I'll do a sketch, a small sketch, and then I will throw it on the computer and start like working on it. If I get frustrated, I'll print it off and then start sketching again.
So we go notebook.
Notebook.
Into the computer. Trace our own artwork.
Or notebook and then like wads and wads of tracing paper. Go over it. Finalize. Bring it in the computer. And if somehow, sometimes the bridge doesn't connect mm-hmm. between digital and analog. And that is, of course, where like a tablet would come in to play for other people. But for me, I have to do it on paper and pencil for some reason. It's just my thing, I guess.
The only way I was able to make the iPad work, because I did the same thing about the big iPad Pro.
Did you get the like paper texture thing?
No.
I did.
But the thing that worked for me is because I've always found iOS applications to be extremely limiting mm-hmm. and just not where my comfort zone is. So then when I found the company who has AstroPad,
that
was the game changer for me.
Yeah.
Because then it was straight up Illustrator or straight up Photoshop
mm-hmm.
attached to my iMac. And then it felt like an extension of my computer, but not like a toy. Because iOS always feels like a toy to me.
Yes. I love AstroPad. I don't use it enough. Yeah. that was one of the programs that I was like, yes, I think I can get this to work. Cause it's, you're literally drawing vectors, but I think it's because it was requiring different tools that I'm not as used to. Like I'm painting with the blob brush instead of drawing out the paths with the pen tool,
right?
Which is what I typically do.
Right. Shout out to blob brush.
Shout out to the blob brush.
Blob brush does not get enough love these days.
No, it really doesn't. Although I found, a lot of illustrators that I follow that I really like love use that tool. And
nobody's saying it though. You're the first one on record that is coming out on the blob brush.
On the blob brush and how important that is for the design community.
2020 is the year of the blob brush, they say. So you can do typography, you can do illustration, but I've also seen you do some work like menus where you don't want to do the coupon, but the menu is a dance of finesse.
I don't mind doing the coupon.
Do you, when you do something like a menu, is there a evil, dark part of your personality that actually enjoys all of that construction of information?
Oh, it's not evil. It's not dark. I love it. I actually do a lot of work in print materials for Pabst. I just don't like to post it because it's not interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't know, whatever. It's not interesting to
what Instagram.
Or whoever's following me for whatever reason.
But to those of us that are deep in the weeds of design, I love the title illustration, I love the typography, but the deep dive of compartmentalizing
full copy,
all that information,
80 page whiskey menu.
Right.
I actually have done a lot of work over the last couple of years with Alex Rinker. He used to be in Venice and I would go to his studio. And he did a lot of hotel rebrands, and I would do some of the legwork on putting together, you know, all the key cards and all the like print materials for their menus and that kind of thing. And organizing a branding system is incredibly important, and finding, like, I love that part, like discovering which parts are the headliners, what goes in body copy, tracking,
right,
letting,
right,
all of that. Like it's a puzzle. It's a fun puzzle.
I always, if given enough space and time, it is absolutely fun to sort of figure out.
But the space and time thing is super important.
Yes, because there's always that moment when you're like, oh, I'm running out of time. And where does this information go?
Right.
Like, where can I get the business hours in here? Or, and then, you know what a lot of people do? As someone who doesn't drink, when they're putting together a menu, space and time runs out and you're using up every piece of the paper. Then you go, we don't need to put our non-alcoholic beverage selections.
Right.
So then I have to go, what do you have that's not drank? Like, and you know what I mean? Like, I'm always like, why can't you just put on the non-alcoholic? Just,
yeah, totally.
Why you got to diss me? Why you got to do that to me? So with the FJ Cruiser illustrations, it was funny because I saw the most recent one you did and I was like, whoa, that's really good. But I looked at everything that you have online. I went through your entire Dribbble. I went through your entire Instagram. I went through your entire website. And I saw the evolution of the vehicle illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like for you to sort of explain, if you can, how you got those down to just the finesse. Because a car has a lot of lines and a lot of moving parts. And it's important to get it down to what matters.
Yeah.
Without looking generic.
I was definitely going a little crazy on the detail in the beginning. I feel like I was almost flexing when I started doing this, where I was tracing out every single line that the like tent on top of the car was, you know, but now I'm just like, okay, here are the solid shapes. The most important thing is getting the right amount of contrast between light and dark. You know, the shadow underneath the car like really helps anchor it in place, but you're going to need darker portions. Like, but also I'm tracing off photos when I do these.
Of course, we all know that.
You know, I mean, I'm not just pulling an FJ40 out of my head, but like,
do that at your live.
Oh God.
I'm going to
17 hours later.
Somebody in the audience, give me a make a model of a car and I'm going to illustrate it for you right now. But on
hot rods.
That's a whole other career. Your last FJ Cruiser illustration though, I thought it really hit the balance. Cause you know,
I'm like, which one was it?
Pull out the ground, dog. But we all see a lot of, there's a hidden layer in the artwork, right? We all know there's a photo underneath a lot of the stuff that we see.
That's good.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
But that particular one, I just thought the way that you drew in the knobs and the tires, like it just struck the balance of and looking at your journey, that you had mm-hmm. found that balance of you knew when to say enough is enough.
Thank you.
It takes a while to get there, right?
It does. I feel like there was a conversation I had with Tim, who hires me to do these for Sackware, which is his cruiser apparel company.
Yeah, so, and when you color them in, fantastic. Like the t-shirts I saw, fantastic.
Yeah, they look awesome. And I mostly just do the cruiser work for him. I've done some, general posters and stuff like that in different styles. But I've done probably a couple hundred of these guys. So, of course, I'm going to like...
There's Lauren playing with her Hot Wheels in the corner. Yeah, you sure you can't go out with us? So you got to work? No, I got to make Hot Wheels, dog.
Like, no, I gotta make some hot rods. If only.
Hey, friends, thank you so much for listening to part one of today's episode featuring Lauren Griffin, a.k.a. Typogriff, over on the Instagram. Make sure you follow her and make sure you also come out to Pop Up Crop November 9th in San Diego, California, to say hello to Lauren, to hang out with me, see the boys of Never Made, and meet Brian Steely, as well as a cast of other characters that will be out there. And I would urge you to come out because these are the type of things where you end up making friends, but not just design friends, but friends that are on that same proactive path that you're on of pursuing that number one way, how we all learn how to take our daydream and turn it into our day job. I love hanging out with people like Lauren that are just starting to find that stride where the career is clicking, and reverse engineering the math of life with her to figure out how do we get to this moment where it all started to feel like it's going right. In part two, we break down those exact moments, the work that she did, how it opened up the doors for the career and the clients that she has right now, and how she got into this moment of growth. To hear part two of today's episode, you have to be a member of the Circle of Trust. Head over to my website, aid.network. Become a member of the Circle of Trust, which what that does is it supports AID showing up for over 1,000 episodes. You get the full version of everything in our archive, including some of our workshops that work over these concepts and in a more in-depth manner of how working for yourself is really the pivotal part of any career to when it all takes off. Coming up in part two, we talk more about Lauren's journey and how this started to happen. And I challenge her and push her to make sure that she doesn't let the clients steamroll her, suck up all of her time, and that she keeps on flirting with the universe and getting some more of her original work out there. It's too good not to exist. And Lauren and I have a fantastic time hanging out. And it starts right now for members of the Circle of Trust at AID.network. So it seems to me that 2019 has really been a year for you. Like just looking at it month by month and then comparing it to your other work that you've posted online, it seems that you've really started to find your groove and find your voice. If you think about what's making this year feel different or how you're feeling when you look back at the artwork at the end of the day, what do you think that you would attribute to getting into this next level of your career? Because it's been a level up for you.
It really has. I the strangest thing is I don't think that I can attribute it to any one thing.
Then give us a list.
All right. Well, I mean, other than the fact that I've had a lot of new work coming in, because mm-hmm. I feel like, once the snowball starts rolling down the hill, it gets bigger and bigger.
Sure.
I feel like once you do one project that really resonates with people, I think for me, that was the Salt and Sea print that I did. That I might have been last year, but that one really resonated with a lot of people.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And from that, I think I started getting some traction.
Was the Salt and Sea print your own work?
Yes. So that was actually asked by the Hoods.
Yeah, Hood Sisters.
Yeah, the Hood Sisters put on,
I know those thugs,
an art show, and they were nice enough to ask me to be in it. And it was all about California history.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to do a print on the Salton Sea. It sort of came to me. I was listening to a song by Chelsea Wolfe, mm-hmm. and she says something about the Salton Sea, and I was like, that would be a dope idea for a poster.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's a sea of bones.
Where's it at?
It's in California.
I hope so. Or you're going to get kicked out of the art show.
Wow. Yeah. God, I'm trying to think of exactly where it is, but it's near, I think it's like Hope Mountain.
I'll help
like
you out. It's off the PCH.
There you go. Sure. I'm sweating now.
That's the easy California. Oh, you know, it's off the PCH.
I'm terrible with geography, just so you know. Oh. It's not my strong suit. But anyway, that print that I did, I feel like that was sort of a turning point for some reason in my, like, in my freelance career.
Well, so here's something interesting, though, because that was a turning point for you. It's really, really great work. Haven't seen you go back to that style this year, as well as your cocktail illustrations. Haven't seen you go back to that style. So my big concern here, as somebody who's got a couple decades over you in the industry, is I'm worried that the steamroller of clients are pushing too much Lauren out of the way. And earlier, I'll show you my notes here. Earlier, you said product line. It's my job, it's my responsibility to urge you
to do that,
to find a sacred space in your calendar and be like, hey world, fuck off on Tuesday afternoons, because look at what a role you've been on from putting a little bit out of that into the world. The more you put into that, the more you're going to win, because you're on a rip right now.
Yeah, I definitely want to do more work like that for myself. I think that is where my strengths can shine a little more. Like the cocktail illustrations were actually for small town, but it is the kind of like style that I definitely don't want to, I'm not going to lose it, but
you
don't
haven't exercised it.
I haven't, not in a while. I've exercised some similar types of problem solving in some of my illustrations with the Pabst work I'm working on right now, but it's not the same sort of like depth, I
guess. Because I looked at it this way. I said, okay, so the cocktail illustrations informed the print you did for the Hood Sisters. And then this career takes off. And the cool thing is that you're finally at that moment in your career. And if I understand you correctly on what's made this year better than the last, is that you're finally getting hired to be you.
Yeah,
you're getting the jobs. It's no longer, and I always say this on the podcast 1,000 times, is the first level of work you get is because you're available, you seem responsible, and you're affordable.
Yeah.
But the next tier of work is we want you, Lauren, to do your look.
Right.
And so it's been sort of the clients embracing your look that has made for the year to be the breakout year?
Yeah, I really do think so. I feel like...
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to Lauren Griffin on Adventures in Design. To hear part two, make sure you head over to AID.network and become a member of the Circle of Trust. If that doesn't work out, thank you so much for showing up and listening to today's episode. And I hope that you show back up again tomorrow. The Circle of Trust begins right now at AID.network.